97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
This is a good topic for Paul Hall on Friday to ask him about. But there is, and I didn't know that this was in play. Ethan and I were just kind of talking about it in the studio. There is a sequel. They're kind of calling it a sequel to The Social Network, which is about, you know, the whistleblower who exposed a lot of the things that were happening inside of Facebook. And we just watched during the break at the top of the hour, we watched the trailer, which was released today. And Jeremy Strong plays Mark Zuckerberg. It was Jesse Eisenberg who played Zuckerberg in The Social Network. That was back in 2010. Did you see that movie, Ethan? Did you see
I thought it
was a pretty good movie.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
This one, the cast is outstanding. Betty Gilpin, who I love. Jeremy Allen White, who's obviously been very popular because of the show The Bear, which is about to wrap up here on Hulu. I love Billy Magnuson. He's got a role in here. Jeremy Strong plays Mark Zuckerberg. So Bill Burr's in this movie.
Yeah.
But you were telling me, so we just watched the trailer. It's like a 2.5 minute trailer that I just watched. It looks pretty intense. They're going to open it. It's a Sony release, so it's a big release, and it's October 9th, I think. But you're saying that the folks in your demographic have given even the trailer pushback?
There's already people that are saying that this is going to be bashing Republicans in this side.
Well, we
of the
know
aisle.
That.
That's going to happen. But even besides that, I think people just look at the first one and how good it was, and they're going, just based off of the trailer, saying, I've read tweets that are not a single scene or clip from the trailer looks nearly as good as what we saw in the first one.
Okay,
and I think they're setting themselves up for failure,
expecting
to get something similar because of how good that movie was.
I don't think it should be called a sequel. That's the thing. It's just a different movie.
It's a completely different cast.
Yeah.
Zuckerberg's a different character.
I don't know. I don't get it. Dwayne Patterson is with us from California this afternoon. He writes at hotair.com. He's the host of the Dwayne's World podcast. Did you see that trailer by any chance?
Which one? For which movie?
It's for the new, it's called The Social Reckoning. So it's like they're pitching it as kind of a sequel to The Social Network. Jeremy Strong plays Mark Zuckerberg, but it looks like it's all about some of the things that happened in the background with the leaks and, you know, things that led up to, I guess I would call it the Twitter files and stuff like that. That was related to Facebook as well. You know, everything that Congress did. I don't know. It was caught me off guard because I didn't know that this was coming out and the trailer just got released today.
I think maybe five people are going to watch it, and all of them work for MS Now, probably.
I don't think so. I think because they're putting this in October, and it's got a good cast, and they have a way of, you know, Hollywood has a way of, and Aaron Sorkin's the director and the writer here, so he usually has pretty big hits. He's by no means anyone that would lean conservative, but I would take a bet on that one. I think that might have a little bit of, you know, juice at the box office, but we shall see. By the way, you know what we're going to know right away? If that movie is a success or not, because box office numbers will come up over the course of 3 days. Unlike in California, if they were counting numbers, it would take 3 months or something like that, right? Are you still counting?
We wouldn't know till January about the box office if they counted it in California.
So I want to tell you something. I made an ill-fated wager on my Friday show last week, and I do this a lot, and we were talking about, you know, at this point we didn't know who was going to make the runoff for mayor, so it still looked like Spencer Pratt had a chance. Now, I never thought he had any chance to winning that election overall in the general. I have a different view, and this is where I'm kind of curious about your opinion because you're out there. I have a different view of Steve Hilton. So what I did was I got 3-to-1 odds from one of my panelists. So I bet $100. I get $300 if Steve Hilton wins. I bet someone else straight up $100. Here's the great thing, though, Dwayne. Like, this is in November, right? If I lose those wagers, I probably have 6 to 8 months to pay them off because the votes won't be counted. And I could just say, look, the vote code's not, it's not final. I'm not going to tell you that you're a winner. I think I have an easy out there, don't I?
You would think so. You would think so, but maybe not. There is a Supreme Court case that will have a secondary impact on this. There's an Alabama case that they've already heard oral argument, and it's about whether or not they're going to allow ballots to be cast after Election Day. And we heard oral argument in this whole thing. This was several months ago. And Alito and Roberts and Barrett and all of them were saying, no, we have Election Day. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say election week, election month, or election season. And just reading the tea leaves, if they come down the way we think they're going to come down on this Alabama case, and it could be released any time. I mean, it's one of the final cases that hasn't been dumped yet. But if this gets dumped, you know, the tail end of June, it will impact what California can do. They've already had the primary, but it will impact what they can do for the general election. And I'm not saying that Steve Hilton can win this thing because I live here. I don't believe it when I see it. It's still statewide. It's a 65-35, 60-40 Democrat over Republican registration. I mean, you could just be Joe Republican, whether or not you're Steve Hilton or somebody that's got name ID. Joe Republican, as long as there's an R next to his name, is going to get 40% of the vote and get his clock cleaned by 20 points. But what could happen now is if the late ballots no longer get counted and you have to go by what gets turned in early for absentees or whatever, and then you've got election day and then all this shenanigans stuff and ballot harvesting no longer gets to be allowed, then all of a sudden you've got a whole different possibility where the Democratic electorate, which has been kind of trained out here for the last 10 years, election day, you got plenty of time. You got plenty of time. Hang out, have a coffee, have a latte, and just kind of check out how things are. And, you know, you'll know what to do once you see when half the vote comes in. Then you'll know where we really need you. And if they can't do that anymore, then all of a sudden you may have a scenario where it could be a perfect storm for somebody like Steve Hilton.
Let's take for just a moment the politics out of everything in California and just strictly focus on the way that you guys vote. Because I think what we've learned, and look, I've followed elections in California before, but I'm not I don't know where you are on stolen election. I do think that there's election fraud. It would be naive to say that there's not. And there are cases that have been, certainly offered as examples, but I'm not overall a stolen election guy. And like, even in California, I don't know how there would be a conspiracy to keep Spencer Pratt off the top two when Steve Hilton wins on a statewide ballot. Now, having said that, these rules that you guys have out there are so foreign to those of us who, we do have a little bit more open voting here than we used to, but to be able to just put a date on an envelope and set it in and then have it count weeks after the election takes place just seems outrageous. I'm all for making it easier for people to vote, but that seems like it's completely making it easier for people to cheat.
We have, there's this long expression in politics, not about elections, but we have this expression in politics where how you comport yourself, how you behave, how you act in office, whether you're an intern or an elected official, you're supposed to act if you're in public office so that you are above any appearance of impropriety, right?
In theory.
It doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong, but don't even put yourself in a position where it looks like you might be.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the problem with California's stuff, is whether or not they're cheating or not, nobody can really prove right now. And even if they could prove it, California's laws, the Democrats, they basically have legalized the stuff that interstates would say, no, you can't do this. But the problem with what California has done is they have given the appearance for impropriety to such an absurd degree that people that want to float the conspiracy stuff, they've got all sorts of room to point.
Yeah. Well, and that's where, counting these votes quicker would do a lot to satisfy people's, questions. Because I cannot believe, and I think we talked about this last week, Election Day was Tuesday. By Tuesday morning, it was like 60% of the vote. Wednesday morning. By Thursday, it was just to 65% of the vote. And I don't even know how close you are now.
It went backwards for one day. And do you know why it went backwards?
No.
There was one day where it was like 57% of the vote in, and then it went down to like 53% of the vote in. And the reason why is because the first couple of days after the election, when they went to the mail and saw the amount of ballots that came in, it was more than the first couple of days of late ballots 4 years ago. So they went, we're going to get more late ballots this time than last time, we think. So we don't know how many votes are going to come in long term, but we're just going to extrapolate based on 2 days of what came in versus 2 days 4 years ago, and we're going to now adjust what we think the final vote total is going to be based on mail that hasn't come for the next 3 weeks. And based upon that new number, we think that only 53% has come in. It's just
That's insanity. That is insanity. It really is. Dwayne Patterson is here from HotAir.com, host of the Dwayne's World podcast. How about Nancy Mace last night? Good Lord. Did you see what happened to her?
Yeah.
I mean, she was a rising star in Congress in South Carolina. She did not do herself any favors with President Trump. She claims that she tried to be on the right side of history with the Epstein files, but she finished fifth in a primary for governor with 12.5% of the vote. It's my understanding she did not make a lot of friends on Capitol Hill, and there are a lot of people that are current members of Congress that aren't too sad to see her go out this way.
She is the Republicans' version of Katie Porter out here in California.
Ooh, that says a lot.
Katie Porter, by the way, she was the rising star on the left. Remember her
whiteboards
and all that stuff? She got 5% of the vote statewide.
Isn't that amazing? And that was an undercover story because, to your point, she was at one point a pretty heavy favorite.
She was a comer.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And she just... look, you don't want to, with her anger management issues, you do not want to get between her and a hot stove for the next month until she cools off.
Did you see the did you watch a lot of the SLPC testimony yesterday with this guy that gets up there and, you know, Brian Fair is his name. He's
Brian
the interim
Fair,
president. I mean, he couldn't answer any questions. We had Congressman Bob Onder on earlier. He was part of that House Judiciary Committee hearing. It was just embarrassing. And, you know, I go back. I'm old enough to remember anchoring newscasts in the 80s and the 90s, citing the SLPC as these experts on, you know, what is hate and what isn't hate. Of course, the origins of the group are quite good. They did a lot in the 1960s to, you know, fight for civil rights, but they've gotten way off the track. And for him to sit there and not even answer basic questions time and time again, is, and that, by the way, that should not be political. That shouldn't be a partisan issue. That's a, you know, what the hell were you guys doing infiltrating hate groups and paying them donors' money when the donors didn't even know what you were doing?
He got hammered by all sorts of people. Tom McClintock had a piece of him. Even Gerald Nadler asked him a pretty innocuous question.
And he's a Democrat,
he's a ranking member.
Right.
And when Jerry Nadler asked him a question, he said, I don't think I'm going to answer you. I don't think it'd be best for me to answer that question because of all these indictments that have come down. And Nadler's like, this has nothing to do with the indictments. I can't believe you're not answering my question. But I'll tell you, he's just spinning himself into circles all day long. And then here comes Brandon Gill, Texas congressman, with the kill shot, right? Brandon Gill comes in at the very end and says, so can we at least agree that Graham Plattner is a bad guy? And when he did that to him, he got the head of the SPLC, Brian Fair, when he's sitting there looking at Brandon Gill, showing him the Totenkopf tattoo of Graham Plattner. And the guy says, well, if I were in Maine, I wouldn't vote for him.
Right, right. That's as far as he'll go.
And fraudulent as far as the day runs. But at least we can agree that Graham Plattner sucks.
I know, but he even almost hesitated on that. He paused and he goes, I wouldn't vote for him. And, you know, thank God he said that. And then what happens with Graham Plattner? Because, look, you heard Susan Collins say some things finally. And even President Trump, like, I want to play this because, you know, she's not been on his side on everything, but he said this today.
She does because she's a sane woman. She's not my best friend at all. These guys are. I get along well, but I have some. But she's a sane person. And she's a person that never missed a vote in many years. I mean, she's like had 10,000 votes. She had 10 votes. She never missed a vote. Unfortunately, because sometimes she voted against me. You know, look, she's a sane woman. And she's a respected person. Maybe a little different ideology than me. But he's a thug. He's a fake thug. He's a phony.
Yeah, and he's an embarrassment, and the Democrats are sticking with him. But, you know, you even talked about this last week. Most people who follow and know this race and know Susan Collins, in the end, she should be able to pull away here. But they're going to fight. They're going to spend a lot of money, right?
Well, they're going to spend a lot of money, and they're going to waste a lot of money when they spend it. Here's the thing. Susan Collins had a primary, too, right? I mean, the Republicans had a primary for Senate. What was her vote total? She got 100% of the vote, right?
I didn't see the numbers. Did she?
Of the Republicans
in a
Republican primary? She got about 100% of the available Republican vote, okay? So who was Graham Plattner running against? Now, I know Janet Mills' name was still on the ballot.
But she had pulled out.
She had suspended her campaign.
Right.
And had abandoned it for weeks and never actually reactivated to the point where she was campaigning again or raising money, right? So who was he running against?
He wasn't running against anyone. Here's something I heard.
70% of the available Democrats in a primary, meaning, I mean, just 3 out of 4 Democrats in an uncontested run said, yeah, he's my guy.
Right, right.
That's not strong support.
So the other senator from Maine is Angus King. He is technically an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats. I've heard rumors that he might endorse Susan Collins.
I think he probably will, actually. Here's what I'm hearing. The day of when it's too late to replace him on the ballot, it's floated between July 5th and July 15th. I'm now hearing that the actual drop-dead date by statute is July 13th. And so now that he's the nominee, what I'm hearing is that the Republicans, who have a whole bunch more oppo to drop on this guy, including names and people willing to go on the record and all that stuff, they're going to wait until after the 13th when they can't Joe Biden him anymore, when they can't Bob Torricelli him anymore, when they can't Bob Menendez him anymore, right?
Yeah. Well, he's going to be on the ballot,
and then
it's going to drop, right.
And then Susan Collins is going to win this by double digits.
Yeah, I think you're right in the end. Dwayne Patterson, hotair.com, host of the Dwayne's World podcast. I hope all is well in your world. We'll talk soon.
You got it. Thanks.
We'll see
it.
Attorney General Catherine Hanaway is coming up here in just a couple of minutes. There is some breaking news. Fox had it at the top of the hour. CENTCOM again announcing that there were additional self-defense strikes at 4:15 this afternoon, 5:15 Eastern, against multiple targets in Iran at President Trump's direction. The strikes in response to the unwarranted and continued aggression, according to CENTCOM. So we'll keep you posted on that. One of the big stories yesterday was the not only the guilty verdict in the Carmelo Anthony case in Texas, but also the sentencing. And I think we kind of got off the air before the sentencing became final. It was 35-year sentence for this kid who's now 19. Here's the prosecutor in the case.
I asked our community to ignore all the noise and instead be level-headed and patient as the process worked. And today, the process delivered accountability.
Yeah, he feels very strongly that justice was served.
Today, justice was served. This verdict sends a clear message. Violence like this won't be tolerated in our Collin County community, and we remain committed to protecting our schools and standing with victims and their families.
All right, so you have a track meet. You have a tent. It's raining a little bit. You have Carmelo Anthony, African-American, goes into the tent. He's not supposed to be there. They question why he's there. You know, they ask him to get out. He doesn't. He says, if you touch me, you know, there's some threats that are made. The you know, there's two brothers that are there. There's other people in tent. There's no doubt. You know, one of the things that I've tried to emphasize here, nothing about this should be about race. It's about a kid who stabbed another kid in the heart. And Austin Metcalf died as a result of this. And he brings a knife into this tent. And now you have a couple things happening. One, there's a video that I'm looking at right now of a dude in Florida that went up to a white guy that thought he was on the Carmelo Anthony jury. The case was in Texas. And he says, I thought you was on the jury selection for Carmelo, my boy, and hits the guy in the face. And, you know,
what?
So people, yeah, it's ridiculous. But even beyond that, we have a member of Congress in Jasmine Crockett, who's from right here in St. Louis. It's funny, now when you hear her, she ain't talking like she was when she was maybe thinking about running for, you know, Senate in Texas. She's talking like she always has. But listen to what she says. And the amount of contempt that she has here, she has, and this is what's happening with a lot of people reacting to this, far more empathy or sympathy for the kid who stabbed Austin Metcalf in the heart than she does for the victim.
What we saw with that verdict is the evidence of a broken system. Now listen, from everything that I understand, which I wasn't at the trial because obviously I got a day job, But it's my understanding that Carmelo ended up stabbing, puncturing, I don't know what this tool was that they talk about, knife, or some referred to it as a tool. He ended up hitting Austin one time, and it was about where he hit him. One time, 2 inches. This wasn't someone who said, hey, let me stab you 5, 6, 7 times. And so when you're looking at the punishment range, there's a reason in Texas that it goes from 5 to 99 or life, because you are looking at how intentional, like how bad was this?
So Austin Metcalf, at one point when they asked, this guy to leave, he attempts to kind of push him a little bit. And then Carmelo Anthony says, touch me and see what happens. Okay. Following the push, he pulls a knife and he stabs him in the chest. In her opinion, it doesn't matter that it wasn't 35 times. It was just one time, and she thinks that we should go easier on him. He literally bled out in his brother's arms.
35 years for a kid who had decided to go under a tent that was not his team's tent as it was raining, and simply didn't want to be put out in the rain by some random kid that he didn't know who was larger than him. Listen, a lot of people don't know what it is to live as a black person in this country, but just like you can give the benefit of the doubt to so many police officers when they go out and they shoot some black unarmed person, even though they are trained.
It doesn't happen.
The fact that there was little to no mercy seen or humanity seen when this black boy said that I was scared, or the fact that honestly anybody else who did something with such a small object, all I know is that it wasn't considered unlawful carrying of a weapon because the blade was not long enough. Mm-hmm. That they wouldn't even say, well, maybe this was more so something that looked like manslaughter.
Well, okay, the jury saw all the evidence. You admitted, Jasmine Crockett, that you weren't there during the entire trial. And by the way, there were at the very least 3 African-American teammates of Austin Metcalf who took the stand and wept over his death because they loved him so much. And they were testifying against Carmelo Anthony, and they were black. And she wants to only pull the race card, as a lot of people do. I think a lot of people didn't follow this case. They don't know. She actually wants to say that it matters how big the knife was? I mean, are you kidding me? So that's unreal from her, where, you know, it's not even relevant how many times, even though it was one time, or the size of the knife. What's relevant is he stabbed him in the heart, and he bled out in the tent, and he died. That's the only thing that's relevant. Whether it was a gun or a pencil, it didn't matter. He killed the guy, and he meant to kill him. I don't know why he meant to kill him, but he did, and he's going to be punished. I talked about what happened in Shrewsbury for the past couple of days, these fights that broke out when you had all these kids that were outside of Sky Zone. Like in the middle of the day, there was a 6-7 day event, and you had 350 people outside that weren't going to be let in the trampoline park because they were already at capacity. So you got groups of 10 to 17-year-old kids, mainly African-American, some who came from up in North County that started fights. They had a kid from Florissant who was 12 years old who said that she saw the fights on, you know, social media, decided to grab a 12-inch knife and take an Uber to Shrewsbury to participate in the fight for protection. What? What are you talking about? This is what's happening. Now, Catherine Hanaway, our Attorney General in Missouri, is on the line. You have made juvenile justice reform a top priority. I mean, this is really outrageous, and even more so, Catherine, for me, because my daughter goes to this place sometimes a couple of times a week at that location in Shrewsbury. How are you?
I'm great, and when our kids were little, they loved Sky Zone. I know what a popular place it is, and this is just absolutely outrageous.
So one of the things that's happening, yeah, and we're seeing like a pattern of this. Sometimes this happens where I am downtown here, but the thing that always comes to mind is, what are the parents doing? Where are the parents? Why is this happening with, I mean, that's a young group of kids, 10 to 17 years old, and how they all got there. You know, you have one kid that takes an Uber. I don't know how that happened, but how do you even begin to address something like this?
Well, what we were trying to do is, first of all, make sure that these juveniles, to the extent that they are committing felony offenses, that there is a record of it. Previously, if they were fingerprinted, there was no sort of permanent record. We always hear about the permanent record, but one of the things this law changes is to keep permanent fingerprints. They're closed records, but so that law enforcement can see mm-hmm. that these juveniles have priors. And then the other thing is, Previously, the juvenile officers didn't have to consult with the prosecuting attorney before making a determination on whether to certify these juveniles as adults and have them prosecuted if they are committing felony offenses as an adult. And so both those things got changed this year in the law. It was our number one legislative priority. It was the number one priority of the Sheriff's Association, and the governor absolutely made it a priority. I think it was the first bill he signed this year.
It just seems like in a lot of these situations, they have similar patterns, and the crowds gather, then they get out of control, and they simply don't feel like there will be any consequences, mainly because most of the time there are no consequences. And I don't even know if there were arrests the other night, but, you know, the police were a little overwhelmed in Shrewsbury. They had to call in, you know, some of the surrounding folks from the area. I'm not putting any of the blame on them because they were overwhelmed. And again, this happened in the middle of the day. But this is behavior that is, you know, beyond unacceptable. It's illegal. Businesses had to shut down, Catherine, because of the, you know, I don't know if you call it riot or mini riot or whatever the hell was happening over there. It's outrageous.
It is outrageous. And we do have to kind of keep thinking about how to hold the parents more responsible. I mean, this is a ridiculous situation where parents just make the assumption that they can drop their kids off and either go into the business or just hang out outside, and they don't assume any responsibility. And frankly, I mean, as a parent myself, I would have been worried about dropping my kid off because of what might be happening. It's just stunning to me, not only that the parents aren't preventing their kids from getting into trouble, but that they don't have safety concerns about their own children in this circumstance.
That's what's baffling to me. It really is. And by the way, I had Senator Shore on earlier. I know he was very involved in the legislation that you mentioned for some of these changes. So hopefully some of that will have an effect. Attorney General Catherine Hanaway is with us tonight on 97.1 FM Talk. So we are quickly approaching the World Cup, and some of these games are going to be in Kansas City. I know that you've been involved. I even saw you on the television monitor here in the studio a short time ago because you're kind of keeping focus. I know I had the governor on last week, too, talking about security for the World Cup. Any updated information along those lines that you can share?
Well, first of all, you're right to call out Senator Shore. He carried this bill that had both juvenile justice reform in it and truth in sentencing. And without him, it wouldn't have gotten done. So we are enormously grateful. But as we approach the World Cup, we're really worried about two buckets of things. One is that it will likely be the biggest human trafficking event in the history of the world, probably. And that is super sad, but we're trying to partner with as many entities as we can to prevent it, to take care of any victims, and to prosecute any perpetrators. The other bucket is all the fraud schemes that are going to come down the pike with it. Ticket fraud, housing fraud, even towing fraud. And we're starting to get complaints about all three of those in our office. So we did post on all of our outlets today some tips about how to make sure you're not a victim of one of those frauds.
So what is it? Because I'll be honest with you, this whole thing with, you know, you have a World Cup that presents a higher risk for human trafficking, that catches me off guard, and it certainly catches a lot of listeners off guard. Why is that?
Well, the Super Bowl ends up being the biggest human trafficking event of any year in the United States. And it's the same reason, except, you know, magnified many times over. You have people traveling away from home who are very wealthy, whose families by and large aren't with them. And when we think about human trafficking today, a lot of it is, you know, young men and women who have been transported there and forced into prostitution. And so that's why it's such a big threat. And we really, really want to do everything we can to get people to report. There's an app called Simply Report, and super easy, and you can't over-report. Like, law enforcement can make the assessment of whether what you saw really was human trafficking. Mm-hmm. But if you see an adult with kids that they don't have a natural relationship with, so they're not a parent, a coach, a pastor, or if you encounter someone who's under duress and has no ID and no means of paying for things on their own, or if you're staying at a hotel and there's a constant turnover of people in a particular room, those are all super big red warning flags.
You know, there's a story, and I just kind of Googled this just to see if anything was happening. And lo and behold, in Miami today, one of the breaking stories is 11 people arrested in an undercover World Cup human trafficking sting. So that's good news that they caught some folks down there. But again, that catches me off guard that this is an opportunity for those human traffickers. So it's good advice this afternoon. Catherine, so much. Thank you so much for coming on this afternoon. Keep us posted on everything. And have a great week, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks very much, Mark. Have a great evening.
Audio cut of the day is coming up. Sue and I happen to be big fans of Barcelona, Spain. I was there 3 years ago. So I was able to visit the Sagrada Familia, who Antoni Gaudí designed this. This is a 144-year project, and I just put this up on Twitter. They completed it, and we have now seen the Tower of Jesus Christ illuminated for the first time at the Sagrada Familia. And I just tweeted this out at their site. It's La Sagrada Familia. You can follow that on Twitter. It was an amazing light show that started from the base of the amazing. You can't even describe this in words if you've never seen it.
I walked in and got teary before any of this happened. It's so beautiful and unusual.
When you look at this
video, it's just amazing.
It's illuminated from the cross, and then it's culminated with a composition of lights that are guided by drones that trace the figure. It was nighttime in Barcelona, of Gaudi. So you actually had Gaudi's like face with drones on top of the Sagrada Familia. Look, I'm showing you a picture of it right there.
Oh, wow.
How cool is that? And then a light show that goes with everything that they're doing in Barcelona. So that's awesome. The only bad part about all that is, and this is a real thing, is that there's a lot of people from Barcelona that do not like all the tourists. They think that they've been run over by tourists. So they've had, you know, demonstrations over the last couple of years, and they've taken squirt guns, and they
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To just
fire
random people?
To the tourists, because they don't want to do anything that's violent, but that's their way of protesting the fact that they don't want, you know, to be overrun by tourists. Now, look, that's their home, and I get it. It's also where their economic, you know, I don't know if it's the centerpiece of their economy. They probably have bigger parts, but it's a big part tourism is. So there's got to be a fine line. But I loved Barcelona. I thought it was fantastic.
It's so cool.
I really did. All right, let's do this afternoon as we wrap up the show.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So I'm a big fan, and maybe because I was there 1 year, of the congressional baseball game. Senator Schmidt is only a couple members of the Senate. Joni Ernst are even playing in this, mostly House members. He was on to preview. He's really pretty good. He had a triple in his first game 3 years ago, and he has been working on his game. So if he does something tonight that's not, you know, magnificent, I know that he'll be particularly let down. But Fred and I were talking about this earlier, because what I remembered from the television coverage last year is Chad Pergram, who covers national security and news for Fox.
Yeah.
He's really a baseball geek, and he calls this game, and he gets like super into it. So listen to Chad here.
Well, this game will be on FS1 tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern time. I will be doing the color commentary. Our colleague at Fox News, Kevin Cork, will do play-by-play. This is about the fifth year that I've been involved directly in this, although I've covered the game since the 1990s. It is a massive undertaking, and the reason is because there are no stats. There's no, you know, sports information department. So this is my book. This is the master book that I put together. Mostly my wife puts this together for me, my statistician. And so I have all sorts of stories and batting lines and history of the game. You name it, it's in this book. And that way, you know, during the course of the game, I can just refer to this. I think that I put this together for college. They probably marked me down a grade because I didn't have a title page. But this is the Congressional Baseball Game Master Book.
Okay, but that's important, because when you hear people, John Rooney, Ricky Horton, whoever's calling baseball games, look, there's a staff of people that are handing them sheets that have updated stats, and, you know, they're professionals, and they can weave this thing in and out. But in a game like this, you got to call the action, and you got to have to, you know, talk throughout the whole game. So he's really doing his prep work, which is awesome.
You know, it's funny when you prepare for a game like this. If I was, you know, roaming the halls of Congress, I know exactly what to ask the members. I'm also a baseball fan, but it's a little harder because, you know, there's a limited universe of what they've done on the diamond. You don't know if people have played in high school or something like that, and so you need to have those stories. If I was just, you know, reporting on my team, the Cincinnati Reds or something, it would be a little bit easier. But here you have to do a lot more research. One of my friends is a professional hockey announcer, and I called a game for the Washington Capitals with him a couple of years ago. And, you know, I put several days of preparation into that, watching the team who they were going to play. It's the same deal, making sure we had the pronunciations correct. Obviously, I have the pronunciations here, but it's a little bit different for the ball game because it's a sports broadcast. In fact, I remember last year they said, okay, Chad, in my ear, you know, get ready to, you know, do the defensive line alignment here for the Democrats. And I was taking my time just a little bit getting through it. And they're like, you got to be faster on that, Chad. We've had that graphic up that long, you know, and it's just the rhythm of doing a sports broadcast compared to doing a congressional broadcast. It's a little bit different.
I'd say it's very different, but
he is
so good at it, and the whole way that they do it. So my understanding is, and I think this is still the case, you can watch the game on C-SPAN, okay, but no play-by-play. But if you watch it on FS1, that's when you hear those guys.
Okay.
And this is not a softball game. Sometimes people think it's a softball game. It's not. It's real
baseball.
Wow. The only rules that are different is they allow substitutions. So you could come out of the game, like sometimes they'll put a base runner on if someone's too old to run the bases, but then they can go back out and they can still play. I'm just saying that that's the only rule that is not like real baseball. And it's entertaining. You can watch it tonight, have fun. My advice is always the same to Senator Schmidt. Don't suck. So he's got pressure tonight. Yeah, and stretch was the other one.
Get more at 971talk.com.